This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all Have Another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in our Lexington, Kentucky studios once again with my producer, Lee Delapina, and want to extend special greetings to everybody joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220 XM Channel 206, and of course, streaming worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. The past couple of weeks, I have been privileged to visit with some of the biggest names in our sport, and that trend is going to continue here this evening. 2 weeks ago, I had the opportunity to sit down with Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. He took the time when I was at Santa Anita for Breeders' Cup, and we spent a full hour. And for those of you who have not heard that show, you probably want to go back to our website and listen to the podcast, because Bob spent that full hour talking about the early years of Bob Baffert. We never made it to Silver Charm. We never even made it to Real Quiet or even to 30 Sloughs for that matter. But it was amazing. Last week, another amazing show. Had the chance to sit down with Hall of Famer Ron McAnally and hear his life story. And tonight, it's William Jinx Fires, another icon in the sport of thoroughbred racing. He will be followed by Kelly Rubley. And this is two opposite ends of the spectrum tonight. We're talking about Jinx Fires, who has saddled more than 1,400 winners in his career. He's been doing this an awful long time. And then Kelly Rubley, just getting started with her career. She's only saddled 5 winners. It's going to be a lot of fun. And that's what I love about this show. You get to focus on both ends of the trainer spectrum. So without further ado, let's welcome Jinx Fires to the program. The 74-year-old trainer was born in Rivervale, Arkansas, July 23rd, 1940. I told you his win total stands at more than 1,400 winners to date. That's 1,408, the exact total. And his runners have amassed more than $23 million in purses. Jinx, can't thank you enough for spending a little time here on Trainer Talk.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, happy to have you. You know, it's interesting. By the age of 74, most people are enjoying retirement from whatever profession they've chosen in life. But training racehorses is unlike any other profession, and you're still coming to the barn every morning and to the races every afternoon. It's a sport that quite simply just gets in your blood, doesn't it?
It certainly does, yes. I came pretty much out of high school and into it. I was in rodeoing and riding bulls and bucking horses, and a man who owned racehorses asked me if I would come out and break some colts for him, and I did, and they were thoroughbreds, of course. And when they went to the racetrack, and I'd kind of fallen in love with a thoroughbred, and I went to the racetrack with them and followed them. With the exception with a couple of years I got drafted in the Army, I've been here ever since.
What was it about
1959.
What was it about the thoroughbred that you fell in love with?
Well, you know, the excitement of racing, I've always been one that liked to compete, and that is a sport. Racing is a competitive sport that you have to compete with, and I've always enjoyed doing that. And so, anyway, but they're an animal that, you know, they take kindness. That's what a lot of people lose their patience with a lot of horses and things, but that is not the way to go. You got to be patient with them. And some people rush them too much sometimes, and they don't get to the races. So anyway, it's got to kind of let them tell you how they're doing, and you kind of see their side of the picture.
Well, you know, when you talk about the word patience, I can imagine that you learned a lot of that from your parents, because you come from a huge family, and it's very much a racing family. But Jinx, your parents had 11 children. You talk about needing patience.
That's correct. we were raised on a farm, and we had cotton, soybean, wheat, and corn, and also raised cattle. So that's where we came from. I got involved in horse racing, like I said, from a rodeo, and an owner saw me and wanted me to break horses for him. So then I brought all my brothers on to the racetrack one by one pretty much after that.
Yeah, it always amazes me when I hear stories of parents and families that have that many children. How on earth did your parents provide for you 11 kids? What did they do for work?
Well, they farmed, and we farmed with them. All the kids worked, too, so everybody worked. We grew up working and haven't stopped.
And of the 11 kids in your family, 9 boys, 2 girls, I believe that almost all of the boys at one point or another were involved with the weren't they?
They have. In fact, only one brother was not on the racetrack. He did some farming and did some, you know, work with putting in sprinklers and buildings and different things. But he's pretty much, everybody's pretty much was in the horse industry. Yeah, I had if you want me to.
Yeah, tell me about some
of that. Go down the line, can tell you what they did. I've trained, and I had a brother named Bucky who was an outrider for a lot of all over the country. And then a brother named Monroe worked on the starting gate and galloped horses for 30 years. And my brother Roger, he never worked on the track. And I got my brother Early, he's won over 6,000 races. He won like 6,740, I believe it was, or 470, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
yeah. And then my brother Herman, he breaks horses and galps horses. So and my brother Wayne, he raises cattle, and he's a blacksmith. And my brother Jackie, who was paralyzed at River Downs in a fall, he was a leading jockey and took a fall and got paralyzed. And then I have a brother Teddy, who is a blacksmith in Chicago.
Wow.
So that pretty much lines them out. With two sisters there, they were married and had children.
It never got involved in racing?
No, not really. Neither one. They like it. They both ride, but they never got involved in racing.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, you mentioned your brother Early, and you mentioned all those wins. Of course, he was inducted into Racing's Hall of Fame on August 6th of 2001, and I had the chance to catch up with him this past summer at Arlington and really enjoyed our visit. You talk about a class act. You have to be very proud of what your brother's accomplished.
We all are, yeah. We're very proud of him, yeah, they are. You know, there's another rider who came from and he's our cousin, who is Perry Oots. He's won over 6,000 also.
Yeah.
So I don't know anybody, but he's our cousin. He's from right home, and we got him involved in racing too. So.
Wow. And you're the second oldest, is that right, Jinx?
I am the second oldest, yes.
So as you're watching your younger siblings come up through the business, did you find yourself wanting to give them some advice and help them along the way, or how did that dynamic work?
I did. I wound up helped them all the way down. I helped each one of them get pretty much where they, you know, involved in racing. They all worked for me at one time or another.
Really?
Yeah. So I was the one that went to the training end of it and they've all worked for me as grooms and hot walkers and exercise people. A couple of them went on out to become blacksmiths. So they've all been at the track and worked from the hot walker up.
Wow, that's absolutely incredible. Talking with Jinx Fires here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Jinx, how did you know that training horses was going to be your calling in life?
Well, you know, I really didn't. I kind of, you know, I started out riding some races and just kind of kept having to fight my weight. And then when I got drafted in the Army, when I came out, I was, you know, had a real weight problems with as far as trying to be a jockey. So I just started working for people. I had bought a couple of babies before I went into the, before I got drafted in the Army, and they were 3-year-olds when I got out. So I took one of them. My older brother Bucky took the other one, and we took them to the track and worked for people and trained them and got to going with those and finally got a trainer's license and just started moving from there, picked up a horse here and there, and first thing you know, I had a stable.
Was it difficult to get started in those early years?
It was, yes. Very, very difficult because, you know, I took the one horse and, like I said, we got lucky with her and started winning races, and I guess a few people started taking a little bit of notice and started calling me about taking a horse for them, and it was a struggle always to get stalls. You know, I wound up, you know, when you just got a few horses, racing secretaries, they don't give you, they kind of put you on the outside of the fence pretty much.
Yeah.
And
where was the first track that you had stalls?
First place I had stalls was at, I guess it was Oakland. I had a couple of stalls there at Oakland, but then went to Chicago. I wound up getting stalled at Washington Park and wound up one night I had 15 head, and sometime during the night the barn caught on fire and they put me out of business overnight. I went from a trainer back to an exercise boy.
Wow. That had to be devastating.
Oh, it was. Yeah, it was a terrible time.
Yeah, how did you get through that time and persevere and continue on?
I went back, started galloping horses because I didn't have any people, you know, that would send me horses right away. So I wound up going to work for Doug Davis, and I worked for him for 3 years. He's a local Lexington person who is, you know, everybody knew, but I worked for him for 3 years as an exercise boy and an assistant trainer. I always had one string, and then one of the other guys had another one. Richard had one. And so anyway, I worked for them for a while, and for 3 years, and then went back out on my own. And some of the clients that Doug had, when he passed away, they sent me horses after he had passed away. They sent me some horses, so I trained for the Blasses for over 30 years.
Yeah.
And so had their horses, and they've had some awful nice horses over the years.
Yeah, they really have. What would you consider to be your first really big break that helped get you started?
I guess, you know, started winning stake races and people started sending me horses. I guess that's the biggest break. But when I got back, started back training on my own from Doug Davis, when he passed away, well, I wound up, Doc Hardhill helped me get into some stables. And I had horses for Calumet, had horses for King Ranch, and had horses for a lot of different people. So I've been... You know, I've had some good clients for a while after, you know, I came back to training, and still do. Still have some good clients.
Yeah, and you've been with those clients for a very long time. You mentioned
a lot of
Patricia
years.
Blass, yeah.
Blass is for 30 years, over 30 years. And I had Bob Yegas, who owned Arch. I've had trained for them for almost 20 years. So I've had people, they stick with me. Usually.
Yeah. What's the key to that, Jinx? Because in this day and age, we see so many people that want to make a change if things aren't going exactly right. What's the key to maintaining those relationships as a trainer?
Well, I always tell my clients the truth about everything. And sometimes, you know, the bad news, you hate giving it to them, but you have to. And I give them the bad news when a horse, something happens to them. They know everything I know about the horse. I tell them exactly, you know, when there's a horse not doing quite well, I'll tell them this is what's happening. And, you know, I'm sure they'd like to hear all the good news, but unfortunately, you've got to have give them the bad news too, because sometimes down the road, this horse may not get better.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Do you find, though, that that maybe even helps them a little bit once they get used to your honest, upfront approach, that now they know, when he tells us something, it's the truth?
I do. In fact, I've had a lot of clients that have gone other places, and they come back to me because they know they're going to hear the truth when I tell them something.
So what was it like when you got that opportunity to start getting horses for the likes of Calumet and some of those storied names that we hear in the sport? You come from, you know, the barn fire and not having anything and going back to galloping horses, and now all of a sudden you look up and here's Jinx Fires with horses from Calumet. That had to be somewhat surreal.
It was. What happened, Buddy Hirsch used to have their horses in New York, and they would send horses back from surgery, and Doc Hardhill would, you know, they needed to be here in Kentucky, he thought, because of the, we were able to use Butte at the time. Some of those horses came out of surgery that wasn't going to do well in New York, because at the time they wouldn't let them run on Butte up there, so they would send them to me. So I would pick the horse I got from Calumet were horses that had been to surgery and came back, and I got them back to the races. We did well with them too.
Jinx Fires on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jinx, let's fast forward just a little bit. You pay your dues. You work so hard to get to the point that you are today. And as I mentioned, more than 1,400 winners. But you had to wait until 2007 for your first graded stakes winner. And that came with a horse that I know is probably very near and dear to your heart, named Spots Gone, in the Grade 3 Hanschen Cup Handicap. Tell me about that.
Yeah, he was a very nice little horse. He's standing stud in Arkansas at present, you know, and he's a nice horse. He had a lot of speed and rated, you know, you had to be able to rate him because he always went to the front. You know, he was a speed horse, and he could run that distance, but he loved to be on the front end. And early and John both won stakes on him, and he won on every type of track too, the poly track, grass, dirt, whatever. And he won at every different type of tracks too, you know, in Chicago, Arlington, and Kentucky, and Arkansas, and I guess Iowa, ran up there, and Louisiana. He won everywhere, so he was a pretty flexible horse.
What's that
like? A lot
like?
Of those horses have to carry their track with them. He didn't.
Yeah. What's that like, Jinx, when you finally break through with that big Grade 3 win after all that time? What's that moment like for you? What was that day like?
Well, it felt very good. You know, of course, you know, my wife used to say, you know, we won a lot of stakes, but we haven't won graded stakes. And I said, yeah, you're right. And we, you know, a lot of times people keep saying, I guess the way to, we trainers put it together, we go to the track, go to the sales, we buy horses. You know, you only got so much money you can buy with, and we kind of on the low end. So we're buying Mercedes, or buying Volkswagens also, trying to outrun Volkswagens that they give $1 million for, you know. So
yeah,
it's difficult, and I don't blame those people. When that's where the good ones come from, when you can buy one with the confirmation and the breeding, that's where you need to go. But my clients, most of them don't pay that kind of money. They, you know, like basically about $100,000 as far as I can go.
All right. Well, let me ask you this then. Is it almost more rewarding when you do win a big race like that with a horse that wasn't, say, $2 million purchase?
It is. It's very rewarding because, you know, people look around and they say, well, wait a minute. He took a mediocre horse, mediocre priced horse, I should say, and beat some horses they gave like $2 million for us. So that is rewarding when you can do that.
Well, Spots Gone would go on a couple of years later in 2010 and take the grade three Razorback. And then here comes Arch, the next year in 2011. Talk to me about Arch. He wins the Southwest that year, then would go on and take the Arkansas Derby, which was your first and only grade one. And boy, what a horse he was.
Yeah, he's quite a horse. In fact, I think he would have won the Rebel down there also, but, you know, there's a horse flipped over in the gate and got up under, kicked him all over his legs, and they had to, the gate crew had to give the horses back to the pony people before they could get the other horse out, get him out, and he was taking really a beating in the gate. I was lucky to have a horse after that race, but had I been close enough to the gate, I would have told a veterinarian to scratch him because he really took a beating there. But anyway, he wound up finished fourth in the thing anyway, and so we ran it back, and he came right back and you know, won the Derby, Arkansas Derby. So he was a pretty tough little horse.
Yeah, he's a very tough little horse, and owned by your longtime clients that you talked about earlier with Bob Yagos and with Patricia Blass. And, of course, you gave a leg up to your son-in-law, John Court. Did that make those moments maybe even a little extra special?
Oh, it does, yes. Yeah, it was good. You know, really felt good to leg John up. In fact, I always wanted to leg early up on one of them in the Derby, but it never happened. I had a lot of them get close, but not close enough to run them. I always felt like I didn't want to run in the Derby unless I felt like I had a chance, and I really felt like I had led the winning horse over that day. Unfortunately, got hurt in the race.
Yeah.
But anyway, and that was the first time I've got a son that's in the Marines, and he's a captain in the Marines that flies a Cobra helicopter. Anyway, he wound up, first time he'd gotten to go to the Derby because he'd always been in school and doing things. So it was good to get him to walk over with me.
Yeah, tell me about that walkover. I've always said it's a lot like, I can imagine a lot like walking up the 18th green on Sunday at Augusta in the Masters. Kind of a similar feel walking over. How would you describe it?
Well, it was pretty amazing. You get a kind of a big lump in your throat, but it was really, really something, you know, special for to be able to do that. And, you know, everybody, it's the most excitement, I guess, that you could get, I guess, just about walking over with a horse, especially if you think you've got a shot of winning it. And I really did.
Yeah, to have your son by your side, that had to make it even more special.
Oh, it was, yeah. Yeah, it was. So,
how about when they come onto the track to the playing of My Old Kentucky Home? How emotional is that moment?
Oh, that's... Even if you don't have a horse in there, you've got to get emotional. Yeah, there was... if you don't have a horse even in the race, that's just something that's really special when they play that.
Jinx, how much do you want to get back to the Kentucky Derby again?
Well, you know, that's everybody's dream in racing, pretty much, I think. And I'm still trying, but, you know, I've got some more two-year-olds and some three-year-old heading that way. But who knows? You know, anything can happen between now and then. But we went back to sale and bought some yearlings this year. So hopefully one of them will make it.
Yeah, you know, it just amazes me when I have the opportunity to visit with trainers like yourself who at that, you know, I'll call it a still young 74 because this game does tend to keep you young. You know, you're out there every single day. You're at the barn, I don't know what, 5 a.m. and you're at the races in the afternoon. What is it that still motivates Jinx Fires to do this after all these years?
Well, you just, you know, it's exciting, of course, to win, but it's exciting just to see everything. And you're kind of measuring your opponents, so to speak, when you go there to watch the races. You don't have horses in. You're kind of looking to see what kind of horses that your horse is going to have to run with next, you know. And so that's kind of what we do when we go there.
What things would you still like to accomplish in the sport, Jinx?
What I feel like I've accomplished?
Well, I guess what you feel like you've accomplished, but what would you still like to accomplish moving forward?
Well, of course, who wouldn't like to win the Derby? And I would like to win the Derby and, of course, the Oaks, too. But, you know, it's it could happen. So that's what keeps everybody getting up every morning. It's got a goal to shoot for, and you just keep trying.
Yeah, I say it all the time. It's a game that's built on dreams, right?
It is. It is.
Jinx, believe it or not, just really only about a minute or so left here, and we could spend easily another hour talking about your stories and your career. I feel like we've just scratched the surface, but quickly tell me something that people might not know about Jinx Fires, maybe what you enjoy doing when you're not around the racetrack at those rare moments.
Well, you know, I played with a Louisville polo team for 16 years. That was my hobby. But anyway, I pretty much just do the racetrack now because I wound up getting my neck hurt in a car wreck in Lexington. Some guy crashed in the back of me, so I don't do polo anymore, unfortunately, because it's a nice sport. But anyway, but that's pretty much what I do. That and take care of my grandkids. I got some grandkids that I spend a lot of time with.
Well, Jinx, I can tell you it's been so much fun to hear your story, and I know we could spend a lot more time. You'll have to come back on and do a Jinx Fires Part 2 up the road, but really do appreciate it. All the best moving forward, and I'll look forward to seeing you over at Churchill or down in Arkansas very soon.
Hey, thank you very much. Enjoyed it.
All right, Jinx Fires here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Dipton. Wow, you talk about an icon in this game, and really, as I mentioned, so much more that he could tell us. Great stories. All right, we're going to shift gears next. We'll go to a young lady just getting started with her career. That's Kelly Rubley. She's in the second half of Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton, next on HRN.
This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
It's never too early to start talking about the Fasic Tipton Florida sale. Mark your calendar now for this premier two-year-old in training sale on Wednesday, March 4th, with the Under Tax Show taking place Monday, March 2nd. 2014 graduates of the Florida sale include Grade 1 hopeful winner Competitive Edge.
Competitive Edge makes it 2 for 2 here at the Spa. Competitive Edge, the winner by 4.5 lengths.
Grade 2 Saratoga Special Hero, I Spent It.
I Spent It, a dramatic winner of the Saratoga Special.
And Blofeld, winner of the Grade 2 Futurity.
Blofeld at the rail. Here comes Blofeld to win the Futurity.
With the 2014 sale boasting the highest average and second highest median of all two-year-old sales, the Fasic Tipton Florida sale is the place to be. Nominations are now being accepted. So log on to FasicTipton.com and nominate today.
For racing coverage from the inside out.
I still kicked away and I thought I really had it until the 16th pole. Amazing little horse.
International English events.
A clear round and under the time limit will get you into the jump off.
And hard-fought Western competition.
Here we go, guys. Let's help him. You bet. Woo!
Tune in to HRTV, the network for horse sports. Online at HRTV.com.
HRRN will broadcast Land of Enchantment Day from Zia Park in Hobbs, New Mexico on Thanksgiving Eve, Wednesday, November 26th. The 7 stakes races, worth a total of $1.1 million, include the $300,000 Zia Park Oaks, the $200,000 Zia Park Derby, and the $150,000 Zia Park Championship. Free nominations close Tuesday, November 11th. For more information, visit ziaparkcasino.com.
The Daily Racing Form NTRA National Handicapping Championship is coming off the most exciting championship in the event's 15-year history. Virtually every tournament this year, on track and online, is filling to capacity, and the purse for the 2015 NHC is expected to be $2 million, and there's still plenty of time to join the tour and get in on the action. NHC Tour membership is only $50 and includes all sorts of discounts and special offers on DRF past performance and other products. Go to nhctour.com today. That's nhctour.com.
The $1 million Delta Downs jackpot, your best bet on Saturday, November 22nd. Delta Downs Racetrack is running 11 races with 8 stakes worth $2.3 million. Play the $200,000 guaranteed pick 4. Bet at DRF Bets. Watch it live on DRF.com. Special first post, 1:15 p.m. Central. For more information, keep reading Daily Racing Form or visit DRF.com and DeltaDownsJackpot.com.
HRRN has a new home on SiriusXM Radio. Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, the Brisnet.com call-in show, and the ExpressBet Weekend Stakes Preview Show can all be heard on their new channels, Sirius 220 and XM 206, and the Equine Forum, Saturdays 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Sirius 92 and XM 92, and always streaming live at horseracingradio.net. If it happens in horse racing, it happens on HRRN.
But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby! Mucho Macho Man, the more they ask, the more he gave.
Here's the wire, and it's a photo finish that goes to Tomlin.
Wise Dan gets his head in front. The first $1 million race in Keeneland history.
Racing's biggest events are right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lescano.
This is Jackie Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna in studio in Lexington, Kentucky. And wow, really fun visit in the first half of the program with trainer Jinx Fires. And you know, this is one of the many things I love about bringing you these Trainer Talk shows every week here on HRN. I have the privilege of hearing so many different stories ranging from one end of the training spectrum to the other. And that's exactly what we do on this program here today. You just heard from Jinx, who has trained more than 1,400 winners and devoted a lifetime, his entire life, to training horses. Our next guest would no doubt love to attain those heights someday, and she may very well. But she's just getting started with a career of her own, and she only trails Jinx by 1,403 career victories. She is trainer Kelly Rubley, and she joins me now on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Kelly, happy to have you on board.
Thank you, Mike. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. Hey, it's only 1,403, right? You can make that up.
Just around the corner, absolutely.
Yeah, obviously, you're just underway with your training career, but do you ever allow yourself to think about what it would be like to achieve milestones like 500 wins, 1,000 wins, even 1,400 career victories?
Well, absolutely. Those are dreams for the future, but it's not what I focus on every day. Certainly strive for that, but at this point, we're taking it day by day.
Well, you're off to a great start. 19 starters so far. You have 5 wins, 2 seconds, and 3 thirds. That's a pretty good batting average.
Yes, I'm actually quite pleased with how we're starting.
Yeah, you should be. Well, take me back to the beginning, Kelly. And where did all of this start for Kelly Rubley?
Well, I grew up in a very small town in upstate New York. Very few horses. In fact, the only riding stable that I was able to find was a quarter horse stable. So I started taking English riding lessons there at a very young age. Probably talked my parents into buying me a horse by the time I was 8 or 9. And it goes from there. I started out competing for the quarter horse circuit in the hunter jumpers and equitation classes, and was very successful there. Went to several world shows, both as a youth and as an amateur, and competed at the All-American Quarter Horse Congress several years in a row. And from there, I went on to begin my career in eventing, which is probably one of my favorite pastimes and the discipline that I miss the most, that I'm not able to find the time to continue competing at that.
Sure.
But, and from there, I ended up at Fair Hill working for Barclay Tag as an exercise rider years ago.
What was your parents' reaction when you told them you wanted to, that this was your love, that you loved horses, you wanted to be around them and even ride a little bit? What was their reaction when you first told them?
That's actually an interesting story. I am the only one in my family who wanted anything to do with horses, surprisingly. They were very opposed to it. They actually gave me my first riding lesson as an opportunity to get it out of my system. They thought that maybe just, you know, one lesson would do it. And
that didn't work.
They were quickly mistaken with that. Yes, they realized their mistake. It went from that to, from my one riding lesson, to me spending every waking moment at the barn, whether they were at work or not. They dropped me off first thing in the morning, and I proceeded to learn to clean stalls and groom horses and do whatever it took to get in as many riding lessons as I possibly could.
Wow.
I think I probably grew up more in the barn than I did at my house.
But now they made sure that you went and got your education, though, not just worked with horses. You did some other things as well. Tell me about that.
I did. I had horses all of my life, but I did attend college. I actually was considering vet school years ago, so my first degree was in biology with a minor in chemistry. And I worked as a vet tech during that time period and, of course, continued to compete with my horses. And then kind of made a career change and went back and got a master's degree in secondary education with a concentrate in biology. So I taught 10th grade biology and then 8th grade physical science for several years, and found that wasn't quite as fulfilling as I had hoped. So
yeah.
I continued on and got a second master's, a certificate of advanced study in educational administration, and proceeded to become an assistant principal for a while. And so, yes, I have all of that to fall back on. And to be honest, those administrative skills come very handy for the career choice I've made at this point.
Really? How so?
Well, it really taught me how to work with people, essentially. I would say that would be the most important skill that I have from all of my years of education, is learning how to manage horses as well as people. And to be honest, my years as a middle school teacher fit right in with my horses, because I would say that they're about on the same level. They're all in their adolescence, and it all sort of works together. And I think my patience as a teacher carry through with how I work with my horses at this point.
All right, so what's more challenging then, teaching the kids in class or taking that young 2-year-old and trying to teach them on the racetrack?
Well, it's a tough call, but to be honest with you, my passion obviously is horses, so I find that to be much more fulfilling and rewarding. So I think that this is where I was always meant to be. It just took me a while to get here.
Some people would think that you are insane to give up all of that you had, all that education that you put in, the time that you were working as a teacher and as a principal, for a life where, let's face it, you have to get up at, 4 a.m. every day. You have to deal with all kinds of different weather conditions and then work until the sun goes down. What led you to finally say, hey, this is what I want to do?
You know, I had the bug when I was 4 years old. I don't know what it is. Horses are just in my blood. And to be honest, I wouldn't do nothing other than this. There's just this draw to horses that I cannot seem to to overcome, and it's the reason I do it. And I think it's very important to love what you do, and this is, you know, this is what I love. What so it makes me that much better at it.
What do your parents think about your decision now?
I would say that they're not as pleased as I am with my choices. They are not actually racing fans. I don't know that they've even. I have to call them and remind them if I'm having a horse run on national television, because they certainly don't follow it as closely as I would like.
Wow, well, you know, once you give them the first winner, though, they're going to be hooked, right?
Honestly, they were thrilled with my Saratoga meet. My mother actually called me up and was very, very excited because I grew up probably 2 hours from Saratoga, so it was kind of home for her.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, and Saratoga is such a prestigious meet, and you know, we went there as when I was a child, and so she was familiar with it. But to be honest, they have no experience in the racing world whatsoever, bar my experiences.
Wow. Well, you'll have to teach them because it's a great sport, and you obviously have a strong passion for it. Otherwise, as you said, you wouldn't be doing this every single day. Tell me about, as a new trainer, really just getting your own operation off the ground. Talk to me about some of the challenges that you're facing right now, Kelly.
Well, the challenges are, of course, you know, I'm taking a big financial reach here as far as, you know, I've been an assistant trainer, which comes with a nice little salary and whatnot, and the comfort of knowing that you always have a paycheck coming, and now I'm branching out to be relying on my own income and, you know, being self-employed. And of course that's a little frightening in itself, but it's also very, very exciting. It's why I was an assistant trainer for so many years, because that was the ultimate goal and the time is here. So challenges would be definitely making sure that I stay afloat and doing things in the right way for my horses to perform at the level in which they need, which is of course most important. And, you know, just taking on new owners. And then of course I'm certainly looking for new owners at this point and welcoming the challenges of a very horse that I have the opportunity to work with.
Well, I mentioned getting off to that fast start, 5 wins from 19 starters. How important is that for you, or was that emphasis on getting off to a quick start to get yourself up and running?
Well, of course it's important, but certainly you don't go into you go into every race expecting that you have an opportunity to win. But as we know, the law of averages doesn't always play out for us. So yep. I must say my first runner was second, and then my very second runner won. So it was phenomenal. It was exciting. Not expected, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. It was very exciting.
Yeah, I guess that first winner, was it St. Albans Boy? Was that at Pimlico earlier this year in April?
Yes. Yes, it was. St. Albans Boy has kind of been my first for everything.
He was
my first horse to win, and my first stake horse at this point. I mean, he's run in 2 stakes now, and we're actually pointing for the Red Smith this weekend in New York.
Wow. Can you put into words that feeling that you have when you finally break through and he wins that first race for you?
Well, you know, he's actually a very unique horse. He's a challenging horse, which makes him kind of my specialty. I like horses that have a little bit of a quirk to them. So honestly, having him perform at the level that he's performing is just, it's overwhelming for both myself and the owner. She's thrilled. He's actually out of a mare that's retired now. He's the last of the string. And so he means just that little bit more to her at this point, because, she has had the mare with several stake winners over the years. So the fact that we're able to continue with that tradition is just very exciting for both of us.
Yeah, that's Ann Polson in Hare Forest Farm.
Polson.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, that's neat because you're involved with Ann. You have a couple of other connections that you're also training for now. And you mentioned looking for new clients and trying to establish those relationships. Tell me about working with Ann and how that relationship came about and some of the other relationships you've already been able to develop.
Well, to be honest, I met Ann through Barclay Tag when I was his assistant. She had horses with Barclay, and we've remained very close friends over the years. And so it was a nice compliment that she was willing to send me St. Albans Boy. She actually sent him to me when I was in at Fairgrounds last winter. He came in February. And I think that, you know, we've had a relationship throughout the years, which has been able to continue with this. And she's still a very dear friend of mine and hopefully will continue to be. I have a filly for her who's currently unnamed, but 2-year-old Tabbit filly who I'm very excited to be making her first start here in the near future. As far as my other owner, Justin Nicholson came to me. He is actually one of Jim Toner's major owners, and he owns the barn here at Fair Hill, which is how I got to know him, as I took on the Fair Hill barn for Jimmy several years ago.
Yep.
And so it's been rewarding. And, you know, when I took on the position as assistant trainer, it was always with the intentions that I would be moving on, and here we are today. But Justin and his wife, Katie, have been such huge supporters of me. They actually are the ones that, you know, made it possible for me to start training on my own. They gave me 2 horses when we came back up here in April and allowed me the opportunity to not only be Jim Toner's assistant and run their Fair Hill barn, but to also have, you know, a small string of my own just to kind of get my feet wet and get started. So they were, you know, they were a great support to me throughout that process.
Talking to trainer Kelly Rubley on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kelly, you mentioned Barkley Tag and you mentioned Jimmy Toner. You certainly learned from two of the best, who, by the way, each have appeared on this very same program to tell their stories over the past year or so. What was it like working with Barkley and working with Jimmy, and what have you taken away from those experiences with each individual?
You know, to be honest, I couldn't have picked two better trainers to come up underneath. I mean, Barkley Tag was just, he expects hard work, but he also appreciates hard work, and such a phenomenal horseman. I actually still to this day miss having Barkley come in my barn every day and go through the legs with me, just because, I mean, I can never stop learning from such a wonderful man. And you know, and in the same token, Jim has been wonderful as well. We haven't necessarily had as close of a relationship because I've always been in Fair Hill, whereas, you know, Jim's mostly based in New York, but he does make trips down every week or so we get the opportunity to kind of, you know, work together. But it's been more of a phone relationship in that respect. But honestly, just having the opportunity to run things by them and see different perspectives from two fabulous horsemen has certainly, you know, it's brought me to be where I'm at now. It's the basis for my knowledge in the industry, to be honest.
Yeah, I've heard from several trainers that once the assistants leave their barn and they go out on their own, they're still cheering for them. And a lot of times they end up competing against them in the same races, but they're still cheering for them. When you won your first race earlier this year back at Pimlico, what was the reaction from Barkley and from Jimmy? Do you remember?
Honestly, both of them. Actually, Jim sent me a text message, congratulations, and Barkley happened to call a dear friend of mine to say congratulations. So it was rewarding to see that they both were watching and that they recognized and were both, I would say, very happy, which was exciting because I have to admit, you know, even though I'm leaving Jim now, I will still follow every horse of his that runs just as I do all of Barkley.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is exciting. I'm sure we'll end up in the same races, and Barkley and I actually already have. So that was, you know, it's just nice. It's nice to feel like it's a little bit of a family, that there's support there.
You know, I've always wondered, as somebody who has never trained horses, when you're just getting started like this and you walk into the paddock with your horse and there's Dwayne Lucas and there's Nick Zito and there's Barkley Tag and there's Shug McGahey and, you know, here's Kelly Rubley and you're still obviously just getting things rolling. What's that experience like the first couple of times you come walking in? Is it kind of surreal?
Surreal is a good way to say it. Yes. To be honest, luckily I have had the opportunity to be with trainers that have, you know, I've been at Palm Meadows. I've been at Belmont. So
yep.
To be honest, I actually know most of the big trainers enough to say hello and how are you? And we see each other every morning on the racetrack. So just that helps as far as taking away some of that nervous energy that you have, because at least you can smile and say hello and there's recognition there. But certainly, It's overwhelming a little bit to walk in there and see some of the, you know, the famous horsemen settling next to you. But it's nice too to realize that you fit, and that, you know, all of your hard work is starting to pay off.
You mentioned when you started
at that level.
Yeah, you mentioned when you started with Barkley that you were working as an exercise rider. Was there ever any thought of maybe going down the road of trying to be a jockey?
To be honest, no. Certainly, I'm light enough, but it's not really an interest of mine. I find more reward in actually getting my horse ready for someone else to take it to the races.
Yeah, yeah. So how would you sum up the Kelly Rubley philosophy to training horses?
That's a good question. Well, I think, you know, the most important thing that I offer in my stable is that each horse is an individual. It's not a set program, and everything that I do, and, you know, this goes back to when I was teaching middle school students, is that, you know, it's important to find what works for each horse in your barn, and not just sort of have a training schedule where they breathe every 6-7 days, regardless of, you know, what's going on and how they're training, and even taking into account their mental abilities. You know, some horses just aren't able to kind of fit the mold of a typical training program. So I think that, and that's one of the reasons I enjoy that I'm small right now, and I hope to not stay small forever. But I like the fact that at this point I get on every one of my horses, every day. So it gives me the opportunity to really know where they're at soundness-wise and where they're at fitness-wise. I think all of those things are important. And, you know, even over the years as an assistant, I made it a point to always rotate the horses that I'm getting on, just so that it gives me that much more of a base level of where we're at and what I think that horse needs to move on, or do we need to take a step back for a little bit. And luckily I have fabulous owners who respect, you know, my knowledge and are willing to give me the time that I need with each horse. And I hope to continue building relationships in that direction.
What are you mentioned getting on horses and that giving you a sense of how that horse is doing and the soundness of the horse and all those types of things, Kelly. How do you know, what are you feeling underneath you that lets you know that horse is ready for that appearance on the racetrack in the afternoon?
Oh, they tell us. They absolutely do.
Really?
I don't know how to put it into words for you, but you just know when your horse is ready. Obviously, you've got the proper number of works in and what fits in your schedule as far as breeze works and whatnot, but they're just happy, and a happy horse is going to run well. And I think that you know when your horse has reached that level where he's ready to give it a shot.
You know, earlier you mentioned when we were talking about your education and teaching and how that prepared you and has helped you with your career now with training horses. I'm curious to know, like, the show jumping, the eventing, all of those things that you did before getting into the working with the thoroughbreds, has that somehow helped you in working with thoroughbreds and training these horses?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, especially my dressage work, to be honest with you, that has brought it along so much for me as far as
really
being able to feel what my horse is actually doing underneath me and knowing what it is that's occurring. You know, certainly in show jumping as well, but I think that if I were to say what was the most important discipline as far as riding that I could put toward training racehorses, it would definitely be my dressage work, which was the most challenging, to be honest, because it looks easy, but it's not.
Yeah, I would imagine that's got to be something that once you can master dressage, that coming now to the thoroughbreds, even though it's a completely different challenge, that discipline that you had in working with those horses on the dressage side of things has to go a long way in helping you with the thoroughbreds.
Absolutely, and I don't know if anyone ever actually mastered dressage, to be honest with you.
Well said.
But we certainly try.
Kelly Rubley on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, a name that you're probably going to hear much more of as we move in the coming months here and in the coming years in thoroughbred racing, just getting started with her career. Kelly, did you have other trainers that you followed or looked up to before you got involved?
Oh, certainly, obviously, I've worked with both Barkley Keg and Jim Toner, but one of my all-time favorite trainers, of course, that I follow very closely is Bill Mott. And there's, you know, numerous others, Christophe Clement, certainly people that I have followed throughout the years and kind of watch their training in the mornings and try to see what I can take from that. Absolutely.
You know, we started off talking about, you know, the number of wins. I was kind of joking about the number of wins behind Jinx Fires, who was with me in the first half of the program. And you said, you know, that's not really what you think about on a day-in basis, obviously. You're just trying to focus on the task at hand. But what goals have you set for yourself?
I wouldn't say that I necessarily have set goals at this point. It's more a matter of doing the best job that I can for each horse that I have in my stable. And to be honest, in hoping that they surprise me each time. I think it would be presumptuous to say I have set goals. Of course, certainly everybody wants to win the Kentucky Derby, right? But
yeah, that's an easy
it's
one.
It's not always in the cards. But I mean, if anything that my education has taught me is that there's no goal too high, and you just keep striving for more and more.
Yeah. I've always wondered this too. Do trainers have go-to jockeys that they like to use in a big spot?
You know, I think each horse kind of depicts as to which jockey you're going to want to go with. Certainly, there are certain jockeys that just won't suit a horse, and you know that by watching how they ride other races and watching how they ride other horses. And my goal is to try to find somebody that I think is going to mesh with the type of horse I have. If I have a really kind of quiet gelding or whatnot, probably pretty much anything's going to work. But, you know, sometimes we have our little flightier fillies and whatnot, and they need somebody who's going to be really quiet and relaxing. And unfortunately, Ramon Dominguez is gone at this point. He's retired, but he would be my all-time favorite go-to jockey over the years.
Yeah, you and a lot of people.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's very interesting. I had always kind of wondered that if there were, and it's interesting to hear you say looking for the rider that fits a certain horse, because I don't think a lot of people realize when they see a rider named on a horse, that thought process that goes into it.
Absolutely. And it doesn't always work out that way. One of the challenges in this business is getting, you know, working with the jock agents and finding a suitable match for your horse. But yes, a great deal of thought goes into each and every race.
Kelly, I always like to end, and we have just a couple of minutes left, but I always like to end these trainer talk segments by asking trainers to tell us a little something that people might not know about them. Maybe what you like doing outside of horse racing when you do get a little time away. What other hobbies does Kelly Rubley have?
Well, that's actually kind of a difficult question. My hobbies have always been horses, and now that's my living. So I guess actually I do a lot of hiking, and I have a couple of dogs that I like to spend a lot of time with. And
yeah, I think they wanted to get in on the interview.
Yes, they did.
I could hear them. What kind of dogs? What kind of dogs are they?
I have a Weimaraner and a Boston Terrier.
Ooh.
Yes.
All right. Yeah, you know, it's funny. Your answer to that question is not out of the ordinary. As a matter of fact, it's very common. Most trainers will say, horse racing, that's all I know. I guess if I get away, maybe I like to go fishing or something, but I never get time to do it. My life is horses. So your answer was quite common.
It kind of throws you, because when you look back, you realize that you really don't do much but work with your horses. There's not a lot of time for it.
Well, Kelly, look, it's been enjoyable. I know you have some new things coming up. Tell me about that very, very quickly before we let you go.
I'm sorry, new things?
Your new endeavor with, weren't you starting a new business?
Oh, yes. I've started KMR Racing Stable. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, that's good.
Yes. It's official as of December 1st. I will no longer be Jim Toner's assistant. And we're separating in that respect, and I will be an independent self-employed horse trainer.
There you go. KMR Stable, Kelly Rubley here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Kelly, all the best moving forward. Good luck.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, thanks so much for being here. Boy, fun show. Jinx Fires, Kelly Rubley here in the second half of the program. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of podcast, available on our website, horseracingradio.net. For my producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Tapena. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk.